This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk. And today we have a very special author who has a book that is just absolutely amazing. His name is Anthony Horowitz, and the book is called Magpie Murders. It's a novel, and it is just out from HarperCollins here in the United States. Hello.
Hello, David. How are you?
I have to be careful not to put the. I keep wanting to put the in front of the title of the book.
That would change things. It's one of those books where even one word makes all the difference.
And it's weird to how that is, but your mind is you're so used to the word the at the beginning, it's like a shock when there's no the. What do you mean there's no the?
There's no the, and there's even a whole chapter in the book about why there is no the in Magpie Murders, and it is part of the mystery, and now it all sort of makes sense once you've read it.
I must say, this has been the best book I've read all year.
Well, you're very kind to say. I mean, this is a book that's been the sort of work almost of a lifetime. I had the idea so many years ago, and it took so long to write. And I can't believe now that it's, you know, finally out there and the people are enjoying it. It's sort of been, it feels like a sort of a lifetime's work.
Now, it was out in England last year, like to the end of, like in the fall of last year, is that right?
It came out September last year, that's right.
And then now it's in the United States.
I mean, I'm sorry?
And now it's in the United States.
That's right, yeah, I said it came out in September, it did fantastically well here, you know, had a lot of really positive reviews, and the joys of being on Twitter these days is that readers can, you know, directly tell me what they think of my work, and I had lots of nice tweets about it. The television rights have just sold, I'm now going to be working on the screenplay of it, and there have been
sorts
of inquiries for film rights and TV rights, which is another great sign, and, you know, the icing on the cake is that this week it came out in America, which has been, you know, it's a whole new adventure for me.
You really are a very talented man. I mean, I don't know how many people tell you that. I'm here to tell you, this book is an incredible book.
Well, you're very kind, David. I mean, you know, it's writing is, you said I'm a very talented man, but the truth of the matter is that I'm a one-talent man, and that talent is writing, and it's what I've done pretty much all my life, and murder mystery has been something that has been very, very close to me, both in my writing for kids and on television, Foyle's War and shows like that. And this book, as I say, I'm tempted to say it's a book I was born to write, and yeah, that sounds sort of a little bit like you'd read on a bad cover.
Well, it's one of those books that as you get done it, you're like, oh my God, wow. And your jaw almost drops open because there's so much that you didn't realize as you were reading the book that you realize at the end, and we can't talk about any of that, but it's so phenomenal how well you masked things.
Well, again, you're very, very kind. You know, I'm very grateful to you. The book is a puzzle within a puzzle, and it has loads and loads of puzzles along the way. I've always had a love of magic tricks, sleight of hand, illusion. I don't perform magic myself. I'm not good enough to do it, but I've always admired and studied the great magicians. And with this book, and with a lot of my writing, I'm really trying to do the same thing, which is what you just said, really, which is to put the clues in on the page right in front of your eyes and to wave my hands over them in such a way that you don't get to see them until the moment of revelation. And that's, incidentally, one of the reasons why I so love mysteries and writing whodunits, is because of that just that wonderment that you said, I think, very kindly, jaw-dropping. When I read a really good murder mystery story, that's the moment I love, where the detective tells you something, and you knew it, and it was right there in front of you, and you didn't see it, and it just makes you smile.
Well, all I can think of right now is, oh my God, I hope he has other stories like this that are going to come out. And because this is...
I tell you something, I've already finished my next book, which is, I wouldn't call it a sequel to Magpie Murders, but it is another whodunit, and it is a sort of a riff on Golden Age crime solving. It's not in the sort of Agatha Christie world. It's very much set in the 21st century. It introduces a detective who I hope I'm going to write maybe 8, 9, 10 books about. And I think what excites me about the new book is it does something with the whodunit that has never been done before, something completely new. And it's just been sent to my American publishers, who are very happy with it. Once again, we're slightly ahead of you on this side of the pond in that it will come out over here this fall once again, so over with you again by the spring. And hopefully you and I will have an opportunity to talk about it next year, and you can let me know if it's a worthy sequel. But I am excited by it, and can't wait to see it out there.
Wow, does it have a title yet?
The title of it is The Word is Murder. And the title is because the book is like Magpie Murders. It's not just a whodunit. It's also about writers and about the writer. I've become quite interested in the whole notion of why we read whodunits, why we write murder. You know, if you see a murder in the street in real life, you're disgusted. But if you read about a murder in a book, you smile. Why? What is the difference? Is it just because one is fiction and the other is fact? Or is it because murder in books sort of takes on a different identity? These are the sort of questions I'm asking myself. And you know, what I'm trying to give people is the pleasure of just trying to solve a mystery and the clues and the red herrings and the suspects and all that, but at the same time I sort of want to add an extra, something that makes you think, so that when you close the book there's more to it than just, you know, the butler did it. You've got to think about sort of, you know, about the whole nature of the book you've just been reading. So that's the next one out, and as I say, I hope it'll be the beginning of a series.
Wow, I can't wait to read it. I wish I had it now to read.
I shall make sure that the publisher send you a very, very early advance copy.
Oh my God, can you imagine what that would do to me?
Well, I'll make sure that HarperCollins in America has your name on their list.
I should say
do. They have a list.
I should say do for me, not do to me. But I mean, the thrill you get. Now, I must confess, last Friday I was supposed to go to the movies with my friend, and I was in the middle of your book, and he didn't show up for the movie. I sat there for 2.5 hours at the movie theater, outside the movie theater, reading this book, finishing this book. And I can't tell you what a pleasure it was to read that book, to finish this book.
Well, I'm so delighted to hear you say it, because the honest truth of the matter is that it's what I've done all my life. I just, you know, with the Alex Rider books for kids, with these books now for adults, whether it's James Bond, Sherlock Holmes, or my own original material, Magpie Murders, all I want to do is just give people the sort of the joy, the pleasure of a great read. And, you know, in my view, there's very little in this world that can actually beat that pleasure, you know, the sort of sense of losing yourself in a book. And I know what you're still talking about. You said 2.5 hours outside a movie theater. I'm just the same, you know. I'll sit on a station platform and I'll even miss the train. I get so absorbed sometimes in the book that I'm reading. And I don't think there's a feeling in the world like it.
Do you remember what the last book you felt that way about was?
Wow, what was the last book I read? Well, I've just finished Dorothy L. Sayers, because I'm reading a lot of Golden Age crime at the moment, Murder Must Advertise, and that just made me smile. It was just such a sort of a fun book to read, that was just totally enjoyable. Before that, The Eustace Diamonds, Anthony Trollope. I read a lot of 19th century literature, and again, these big, fat books with their wonderful characters and their position and their storytelling, they just suck you in, and I love that book too. I was just, you know, devouring it to get to the end. I think thrillers and whodunits have a sort of an added plus because they make you turn the pages faster and faster to find out what's going to happen. You know, there was a book out last year I read, or maybe the year before, I Am Pilgrim. You must know it was a huge bestseller.
Oh, yeah,
It had that wonderful, compelling quality of, you know, how is the guy going to get out of this? How is he going to find the killer? How is he going to sort of stop this terrible thing happening? And it's just, you know, I think that books like that, in a funny way, they're few and far between, but they're the books I most love.
Right. Now, you've also written a lot of the Midsummer Murders. Have you written every episode of that show?
I wrote the first 7 episodes of it. I stopped writing it a very long time ago. I sort of helped create that show. There are some wonderful books by Caroline Graham on which the television series was based, although I gave the TV show its name and sort of formatted it to an extent, wrote the first 7 episodes, and then after that, I retired from the show. I said, not because I didn't love it. I've always loved it. I've always thought it just a great, smiley show. But I wanted to do Fool's War, and that's what I went and did for the following 16 years. I wrote 26 two-hour episodes of Our Fool's War. So many murders, so many suspects, so many, you know, complicated stories to write, but I loved every minute of it.
Oh, that's great. I mean, you got your hand in a lot of different things, so it's like a new experience for you every day.
I've always said that, you know, David, that writing is an adventure. I mean, that if you make writing into a job or an occupation or something that you earn your living from, there is a terrible danger that it will just become that your books won't sing, but the next book will somehow just be a little flatter than the one before. And I don't think that necessarily matters. I mean, there are some series out there that you know, people write them because they are all the same. But for me, writing is an adventure, and I'm always trying to challenge myself, to excite myself, to do things that haven't been done before. I mean, Magpie Murders, this murder within a murder, and the way those two, you know, the Magpie Murders story set in the 1950s and the modern story in the same book, the way they interconnect, I think it's new and it's original. And to me, that's the fun of being a writer. I turned 60 a couple of years ago, and it reminds me that, you know, the time is drawing short. I want to use my time, the time that I have left, 10, 20 years more writing, however much, to explore newer areas and do new things. That's the reason to keep going.
Well, Mary Higgins Clark is, what, almost 90 years old, and she's still going strong, so you could be writing another 30, 40 years, who knows?
Slightly scary thought. At this rate, I've worn myself out in a year or two, but yeah, I know. I mean, I'm just somebody with a lot of ideas, and I still, you know, I'll tell you something that's funny, and I've been writing now professionally for at least 30 years, and I started writing when I was 10. I mean, that's when I knew I wanted to be a writer, and I can honestly tell you that I get as much pleasure and excitement out of writing now as I did then. To me, every new page is just a new challenge, and it's an opportunity to make myself and to make people smile.
But when I think about what must have gone into this Magpie Murders for you to write it, I mean, it's so complex, and yet it's so enjoyable, and there's a chapter with, what's his name, Locke?
Yeah, that's right. Yes, the modern policeman.
And
they all interconnect. In the old world, in 1950s, there's an Inspector Chubb.
Right.
And in the modern novel, there's an Inspector Locke, and of course, they're one and the same, really. But one has been interpreted by the writer who's in. You know, if I talk to you this way, it's going to make your people listening to this think how complicated it is. But the truth of the matter is that the hardest job I had in writing Magpie Murders was to write a book that was complicated and was sophisticated and would keep you guessing, but which was easy to read. To me, I don't like a book where you have to, you know, you're on page 200 and something, and you have to thumb back to page 130 to find out who is this character, what was he doing, where has he come from. I like a book that is easy to read, that you don't have to stall over and worry about. And that was the hardest job, was to make sure that Magpie Murders was an easy read, even if it was a difficult write.
Well, there's that one chapter that he's in where they go to interview him, and he just sounds off on everything, and it is so wonderful. That chapter is so wonderful. It had to be fun to write.
I love that character. I mean, because his problem is that he doesn't like you know, the crime fiction. He's a real policeman, and he resents writers like me who make it all up. And I think that just makes me smile, that sort of idea that within a book, there's sort of two different worlds of murder. You know, when you meet Locke, he says, you know, I go to murders, I see them, they're not clever, they're not like people in Agatha Christie books, they don't plan it, they don't sort of put the cyanide in the sparkling champagne and then serve it over dinner dressed up as a waiter. They just get out a knife and kill somebody because they're angry. And so for him, murder is brutal, murder is right. Modernist, murder has no compelling quality at all. But people who read Agatha Christie or Ellery Queen or Dorothy Sayers or any of the great murder mystery writers, P.D. James, murder is an intellectual game, and that to me is what I'm exploring, the sort of the difference between reality and fiction.
That's exactly right. It is a game. It's a distraction. I mean,
Sherlock Holmes is amongst, you know, other things, he is a great game player.
Right. And he's not the most upbeat detective in the world either. He's a very sullen guy. He's not a very fun, he's fun in how he figures things out, but his personality leaves a lot to be desired.
Sherlock Holmes?
Yeah.
You're talking about. Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, the genius of Doyle was to create a very cold-blooded, rather aloof detective, somebody that you or I would not particularly get on with or like if we met them. But then he also invented Dr. John Watson, the narrator, who is warm and affable. equitable and humane. And because he liked Sherlock Holmes, and because he admires Sherlock Holmes, so do we, the reader. And it's a brilliant magic trick, in a funny way, that to turn this sort of very unsympathetic character into this great hero. And Dr. Watson is what does it.
And it's interesting, because I've always thought Nigel Bruce is one of the better Dr. Watsons. I don't know, there's something about the way he portrays Dr. Watson that just was, I mean, he's a little bit bumbling, he's a little bit befuddled, he really doesn't know what's going on, and yet it's almost comedic.
And who is your favorite Sherlock Holmes?
I'm sorry? Oh, my favorite Sherlock Holmes?
Who is your favorite Sherlock
Holmes? Well, I grew up with Basil Rathbone, but I never much cared for Jeremy Brett. I thought he was very dark.
Oh, my goodness, he's my favorite. Jeremy Brett caught it for me perfectly. You just said it a moment ago, how cold-blooded Sherlock Holmes is and how, in some ways, unlikable. I thought Jeremy Brett just captured that perfectly. But horses, look, everyone has their favorite Holmes. For some people, it's Robert Downey Jr. So, I mean, you know, who's to say? But for me, it was Jeremy Brett.
I think you're probably...
Rathbone, though, is pretty good, too.
Yeah, I think the reason I couldn't watch Jeremy Brett was he seemed too mean to me. I used to get scared watching him. His expressions used to scare me.
Yeah, I think that's a fair enough comment. That is true. But then, you know, what's interesting about Jeremy Brett was that he was a very troubled human being, and I think a lot of his own anger and unhappiness in life he put into the portrayal of that part. But those are still my favorite dramatizations.
But then I think of the show Elementary that's so popular here in the United States now. And I think
I've seen a bit of that. I quite like that too. It's not totally true, I think, to Doyle, but it's enjoyable.
It's enjoyable to a certain extent, but I think it's not enough like Sherlock Holmes that I could just. I think I watched like two or three seasons
of it. That's
right.
That's what I said. That's what I meant.
And I think I just got a little tired of. It just didn't seem the same to me. I think at first I thought it was, and then I realized. Oh, this guy's a really whacked out individual. Not that Sherlock Holmes wasn't, but he never seemed that way in the older movies.
I've only seen maybe a dozen episodes in that early season, so I didn't even know it was still going, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's still, I think it's up to like season 4 or 5, but the whole idea of having a woman Watson is an interesting concept.
Yeah, nothing wrong. Lucy Liu is a great actor.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you can go back and forth on that. But getting back to your book, so how many years total did it take to write this book?
Well, it took me about 23 years of waiting to write it, then about 2 or 3 years of thinking, and about 18 months of writing.
Oh, my God.
Approximately. Something like that. I mean, I have a notebook sitting here on my desk right now, and it's got about 30 or 40 pages of diagrams and scribbles and questions to myself and just sort of, you know, trying to break down this book and trying to make it work. I'm going to see if I can find you a page. I'm looking at it right now. I'm opening it now. Add more nice things about Mary Blackstone. Add Brent's description of a body, Tom, being found. Add Joyce saying Robert had a tough time at school. Do you recognize the handwriting? Diary and envelope, both written by Mary. These are all just note after note after note of this book trying to sort of, you know, assemble itself. And these, the murder, 8:30 p.m. Graham Blakiston comes to house. There isn't a character in the book now called Graham Blakiston, but that's what he was called then. Turned away after row, seen by somebody, 8:40, meet somebody else. You know, it just goes on and on and on, page after page of trying to sort of make it all make sense. And then finally, you know, I wrote it, and then I rewrote it, and then it was edited, and I rewrote it again. And I think the version that you have in America is the final version with everything in correct place.
Well, the British version and the American version are exactly the same, correct?
Oh, indeed so, but actually the first edition of the English version did have a lot of errors in it. I was quite upset that the copy editors let them slip through. Not a huge number, but there were enough for me to sort of raise an eyebrow. But it was an incredibly complicated novel to copy edit because there were so many things to have to remember.
Right.
Every page almost has something that is either a clue or a tending you, steering the story towards a clue. It's, you know, even as I talk to you, I remember how exhausted I was by the time I finished writing it.
Well, the interesting thing, one of the things in this book that I've hardly ever seen ever is the fact that it goes up to page 200 and some and then starts over again.
Well, that's because, of course, the novel that is being written, Magpie Murders, is unfinished when the author is killed. I mean, I don't want to give too much away, but that's how it works. And somebody is reading the novel in the 21st century, and she... The first thing he says, you know, are you annoyed? So was I. You know, what am I going to do? And it's, I think it's quite funny in a way that, you know, if there's one novel in the world that can't be missing its final chapter, it's a whodunit.
Right. And what a concept. And all through the book we're thinking, oh my God, I hope she finds his last chapter. What if I don't find out who done it? I'm going to be so disappointed.
Well, that was the trick, was to make sure. You see, don't forget that the end of the book, unlike any other whodunit, has not got one solution. It's got two solutions you have to go work your way through. And that took me a lot of time as well to work out which order they should come in and how that would all work and you know, when you would find out all the secrets of each of the books. And, you know, I can't tell you what a relief it was to finish the book and to look at it sitting as a manuscript on my desk and to realize that I had pulled it off, that it had worked. I mean, it really was a little bit like my own private Everest. It was a mountain to climb.
Well, how this all started, I didn't even know about the book, to be quite honest. I think I had seen something about it months ago. And you know how when you see a book's going to be published and it's way down the line and then you forget about it and suddenly as the book gets closer to publication, you see another thing about it. And somebody sent me this thing and I thought, oh my God, that looks incredible. So I contacted the publisher. I said, I want to read this book.
I'm so glad you did. I mean, you know, that means we've had the conversation and you've had the pleasure of reading it, which is just great. And, you know, you've been so very kind about it. I have to say that the reviews I've had in America in some of the mainstream newspapers have been phenomenal. I mean, you know, I'm so flattered and happy and excited because this is my third or fourth adult book I'm published in America. There were the two Sherlock Holmeses, House of Silk and Moriarty.
House of Silk's incredible, too.
Thank you very much. I mean, you know, if you like a book with a twist, and if you like a book with a surprise at the end, that was what I was trying to do there. I was talking earlier about magic tricks instead. The Moriarty is actually based on a magic trick. It's based on a card trick. I happen to know the mechanics of a card trick and applied the same technique to that story to make a thriller with which you wouldn't see the end coming. So there were the two Sherlock Holmeses, there was the James Bond Trigger Mortis, and now this. And it, you know, but this one is, I feel that I've arrived with it. I am excited.
I haven't read Moriarty yet. I'll have to go back and look. There's so many.
Please do. I guarantee it'll make you smile.
Well, I hope so. I mean, I literally, after being at that movie theater for 2.5 hours reading the rest of this book, I was bleary-eyed. I mean, I literally could barely see my car because my eyes were just...
And are you going to tell me which movie did you miss?
Wonder Woman, actually.
Oh, that's supposed to be very good.
Yeah, supposedly it is. I'll never know because I didn't get to see it.
You might get around to seeing it. It's always going to be there on DVD or Netflix or somewhere.
Yeah, I'm just in awe of your talent, of how well you write. This book is just, I mean, to say it's a page turner, it seems almost an insult because it's more than just a page turner. It's an amazingly written book. I mean, and there are chapters that are just so compelling. You're just sitting and reading them and thinking, God, this is just, I don't want this to end.
Well, you're very, very kind. I mean, the book was a challenge to write, but it was also a huge pleasure. And sitting here now in my London office, you know, with the book out in America and out in England, you know, I feel a sense of total, what's the word I'm looking for here? I just feel that I've achieved what I set out to do.
Which sounds like you're very content.
Yeah, well, content and just satisfied. I'm satisfied, which I not often am. I'm the sort of writer who's always questioning what I do. I'm always challenging myself to do better. I have this fear of writing a book that is less good than the one before. And you know, with Magpie Murders, it's going to be a very, very difficult book to beat.
I must say, when I hear an author that has been writing children's books, and then suddenly they write adult books, I always think to myself, oh God, I hope they're good. I hope they're really good. And in your case,
it's a very difficult bridge to cross. The world of children's authors trying to write adult fiction and adult authors trying to write children's fiction you'd be surprised how many people come a cropper on it. It's a very, very difficult double act. And I guess the only way I've managed to do it myself is that, you know, all the years I've been writing children's books, I have been writing adult television. So I have been telling stories to both kids and to adults. And I found the switch, I wouldn't say easy, but I have found it quite comfortable. I feel that I know what I'm doing, which is all I can ever search for when I'm writing, is this sense that the words coming out of me are the right words in the right order, the right pace, and that it's all sort of working.
Right.
It's not an exact science, writing. It's an odd science. It's an odd business being a writer. As I say, it's one of the things that I'm now writing about.
Well, nowadays it seems like it's the other way around. You got the adult writers suddenly writing children's books, and there's a just
not always very successfully.
Right. I'm thinking of Harlan Coben for one. I've never read any of his kids' books.
I haven't read his children's books. I very much admire his adult books. I haven't read his kids' books. But then John Grisham also, I think, wrote for kids. His books for kids are extremely good.
Yeah, I haven't read those yet, but they do look good. They do look.
Yeah, I've heard they're good.
They look interesting, and it's a difficult process because you're writing to a whole different audience of kids.
Well, so, that's the funny thing is, I wonder to what extent the kids' audience and the adult audience are different, and whether actually a writer should be aware of their audience when they're writing the book. These are big questions. You know, the truth of the matter is that when I write a book, if it's an Alex Rider book for kids or it's Magpie Murders for adults, I'm not wearing different hats or sitting in a different room or I'm not putting on a different voice. The difference between the two is very, very small and subliminal. And I think that where you can make a mistake is if you take a big breath and say, hey, this is for kids, you're going to write stuff that's patronizing. If you take another deep breath and say that this is for adults, you might be boring. I don't know. I mean, you know, every writer is different. But for me, I never really think too hard about who the audience is. A lot of it is instinctive. And I will do things differently, of course. You know, if it's a kid's book, there is certain material which I know I will not use and not write
right.
about because it is not suitable for children. Again, for children, sometimes I'm careful not to use overcomplicated language. Why make it difficult for them to read? But then that's also true for adults. You know, when I'm writing for adults, I want the language of the book to be beautiful. I love language, and it's important that a description and dialogue and sentence structure should be attractive. But it's. It isn't sort of targeted. I don't target books deliberately for a typical audience.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if Locke, if you could, you know what would be really cool if you wrote like short stories with Locke in them?
I have so much writing to do between now and the end of next year. The chances of me doing a series about Locke are very minimal, but I will make a note and bear it in mind.
I'd love to see one story about what he's really like and to see how he solves crimes. I think that would be fascinating.
Read The Word Is Murder next year, and I think you'll be satisfied.
Oh, really?
Locke isn't in it, but it sort of belongs to his world.
Oh, wow. Now that sounds intriguing. So you've already finished that?
Yep.
Well, you'd have to, I guess, cause since it's coming out in the fall in England.
No, I mean it's copied. It went back to the publishers last week.
You're
one thing I want to do. In fact, I'm gonna have to wind this up anyway, because the one thing I want to do tonight is they want to have one of the stores wants some extra material. So I'm working on a short story to go in the back of a limited edition, and I have to write a locked room murder mystery story between now and Tuesday.
Oh, really? So you're under the gun here.
I am a bit under the gun, yeah.
Now, tell me about your childhood.
That's an idea, I think.
I'm sorry?
You want to hear about my childhood?
I'm curious as to when you wanted to start writing. When the thrill of writing...
When I was 8 years old, I was the son of a very wealthy father and a very wealthy mother living in a very expensive house. But it was a house with very little emotion in it. It was a strange sort of old-fashioned upbringing. My father was a businessman, very distant from me. My mother was out a lot. I had nannies to look after me. And when I was 8 years old, I was sent to a boarding school, which is something that we Brits do very well. We send our kids to these horrible schools. And the school I was sent to, which wasn't very far from my home, about 8 miles away, was a very, very brutal, unpleasant school where things like beatings were continuous. And I'm talking here about boys being caned until they bled.
Oh,
where the teachers were very violent. violent and often, I think, quite disturbed human beings. An element of fear pervaded this school. And I was not a clever boy. I was a very unfit. I was very overweight. I was very slow. I was not good at anything. And I found myself in this horrible place that I hated. And the way I found myself and the way I saved myself was, first of all, I discovered reading and going into books, which is why whenever I talk about books, you get the sense of it's a lifeline for me, because that's what books have always been. But the other thing I found at this school was that I was able to tell stories. And so in the dormitories, we slept 8 boys to a room. At night, I told the other kids stories and became the dormitory storyteller. And every night I used to get pulled out of the dormitory and made to stand in the cold corridor because you weren't allowed to talk after the lights were out. But nonetheless, I kept on going. I told stories, and from telling stories to writing stories was only a very small step. By the time I was 10 years old, I had absolutely no doubt at all that I would be a writer. That was all I could be, it was all I wanted to be, and it was all I would be.
So what books did you start reading? When you started reading, what were some of the books you read?
I wasn't a clever kid, so the first books I read were cartoon strips. I liked Tintin. That was my first
book. Oh, really?
Tintin. Then there was an author called Willard Price, Canadian naturalist, very, very good writer. He wrote a whole series of books, Lion Adventure, Whale Adventure, Jungle Adventure, Cannibal Adventure, always with adventure in the title, always traveling around the world collecting animals for their father. These days, I'm not sure I would like them so much because I don't really like zoos, but that's what the premise was. At the same time, these kids had adventures and got involved with criminals, and I just loved those books and just lapped them up and couldn't wait for the next one. And then shortly after that, a guy called Ian Fleming came into my life, a character called James Bond. And then after that, it was Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, Sherlock Holmes. And all the books I loved as a child, I still love as an adult. It's funny, I've never really lost my love of those first books.
What was the reaction to your James Bond book from the public and the critics? What did they think of it?
I can tell you the reaction from the James Bond estate was they loved it, to the extent they've asked me to do another one. And in fact, the next book I'm going to write, starting this summer, is my second James Bond novel. So that's good. I would say that the other people who loved the book were largely, and I don't want to overclaim here because somebody might disagree, but I think that the James Bond societies, the fanzines, the fan clubs, people who really love Ian Fleming were very warm about the book and liked the fact that I had been very careful to try and to try and be as close to Fleming as possible. The reviews were excellent. Sales were good. I don't know. So, by and large, the title divided people. Trigger Mortis. It's a pun. Some people like puns. Some people hate puns. And maybe it wasn't a great title, but the title is probably the hardest thing to get right in a Bond novel.
So today, you seem like you're a very happy person. I mean, you're happy writing. Obviously, it's what you want to do. It's what you love to do. So,
I think I'm happy. I'm very fortunate. I've been married for 29 years. I have 2 wonderful sons. I live in London. I have a dog. My life is successful. I'm not always happy. I'm a solitary. When the writing is, I think, largely based on tensions inside you that you're always exploring and rubbing. So I have my dark moments, my black dogs, as Churchill would call them. I wake up every morning and I have to thank my creator for giving me such a great life and for things having gone so well.
You're very refreshing to talk to. It's very refreshing that you say all these things and you really mean them and I like that in all.
Well, I do mean them. Of course, I mean them. But I think to myself, if I hadn't got published, if I hadn't been successful as a writer, what would I have done? And that, there is no answer to that question. And so the fact that the things have worked out for me is just fantastic. And as I say, every day I'm grateful for it.
Well, the thing here's the thing. I mean, I feel a lot of what you felt as a kid, this thrill of reading and but my problem is I'm not really a writer. I don't think I could write a book, although maybe I could. I don't know. But you transformed that love of reading into writing, and you've made a huge success out of it.
Every kid has a talent. Every kid can do something. With me, the one talent, the one spark I had is the ability to tell stories, and that's what I have done all my life.
And it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And
I agree.
You seem to have endless stories to tell.
I I do have stories. I do have stories all the time. Every day, another story. I mean, it's extraordinary. They just won't stop coming. I try and think to myself, well, writers are actually, they were not clever. We're sort of transistors. We're sort of, a transistor, a wireless, a radio sitting on a shelf that can pick up signals from somewhere. I know it may sound a little pretentious, but sometimes I'm looking for an idea or a joke or a story, and it just sort of arrives. And it isn't because I'm clever and because I thought of it. It's because I was sitting here and I picked it up. And I think that that's a lot of what my work is about. I talk to people like you, I travel a lot, I go to different places, I see lots of things, and everything I see somehow sends me this signal that turns into a story, and that's what I keep doing.
I'm looking at the cover of the United States version of Magpie Murders, and I'm trying to figure out what the all these things mean in the bird. The X and the key and the telephone and the...
You have to ask the publisher, not me. I don't have any idea.
It's the weirdest thing. It's like, what are all these things? I'm trying to think. Maybe they...
I do love that cover. I'll be honest, I think it's a great cover. I think the book looks great. But what it all means, heaven knows.
I thought maybe you knew. I thought maybe you knew what they...
They showed me the cover. I smiled. I said, I love it. And I never asked.
Which is maybe the way.
I must love you and leave you, as it were, because I have to do chores. I have to look after my son, make dinner, and also write a story.
Right. Well, we will let you go. This has been a thrill for me, and the book is a thrill, and the book.
Well,
is
it's been a pleasure talking to you. I mean, what I love is I love meeting you, and I love talking books and talking ideas, and just, and obviously you've been very kind about my work, for which I really am very, very grateful. And it's a funny thing, isn't it, that books, there's no argument about books. We live in a world which is so full of anger and so much fear, and politics in both America and in England has become so divisive, and there's so much acrimony around. And then I think to myself that books provide this wonderful safe space where somebody like you and somebody like me can meet, and we can share ideas and agree or disagree. But story is what unites us all over the world, the sort of where we've come from and who we are and where we're going. And I can't tell you, the older I get, how happy I am that my whole life has just been dedicated to this one thing, and that I've never, I'm not saying that everybody has always loved everything I've written, but by and large, I haven't major offense.
London's been in our prayers lately a lot, with all that's been going on.
I'm talking about divisiveness, and we've had today the most awful, I don't know if you've seen, that we've had the most horrible fire in a high-rise apartment, a 27-story apartment exploded in flames late last night, and there are many, many casualties, and the firefighters have been out. When I went into London this morning, there was a great plume of smoke over the city, and you think to yourself, this is instantly not a terrorist incident, it would seem just a fire, but it's still lives have been ruined, and people have lost their lives. And I just think to myself, there is so much to fear and so much that is bad. Thank goodness for books.
Yeah, and I feel exactly the same way. I really do. So do you have any idea when?
Stop. That's a good place to stop.
Yeah, indeed. I could go on all day with you. You're so fascinating to talk to. The book, again, is called Magpie Murders from HarperCollins. It's out in the United States right now, and I'm sure it's an e-book.
And let's make a date to talk again when the word is murder is out.
Yes.
Next year. But let's do this again with that one and see if you can be as generous and as kind as you've been about Magpie.
Absolutely. And this has been David's Book Talk. We'll talk to you next time.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, Baldacci.